Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience here in the South and our online audience joining us around the world. We're glad you all could be with us, too. One of the things you may have heard a lot about, especially over the past couple of years, is free college. Is that something that is possible? Who will that benefit? And why is it a conversation that definitely has, I think, impassioned individuals on both sides of it? Well, we're excited to welcome author Michelle Miller Adams to our program today. She's the author of a really thought-provoking book called The Path to Free College, In Pursuit of Access, Equity, and Prosperity. We'll talk to Michelle not only about the very personal story that is kind of behind her wanting to share this message, but also to have the dialogue that is so needed, and I think a perspective that may be new to many of us. If you guys are just now hearing about The Path to Free College, of course, we'll let you know how to be able to get the book for yourself. Before we get into that, though, we're going to get into our musical mix. Here is Alicia Keys with Good Job, right here on Conversations Daily News.
Good job.
That was Alicia Keys with Good Job here on Conversations Live, both for our radio audience here in Mississippi at WYED 94.1 FM and WYEDonline.com, as well as our online audience tuning in. We're glad you all could be with us, as I mentioned. As I said, our next guest is going to talk to us about a topic that has definitely been in the news a lot. You probably have heard different people, either in academia or even politicians, talking about it, that being free college. We're excited to welcome Michelle Miller Adams to our program. Her new book is called The Path to Free College, In Pursuit of Access, Equity, and Prosperity. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to talk to Michelle not only about what prompted her to write this book, but also the conversations she's been able to have and what she hopes you're able to know about the topic as well. Michelle, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Cyrus, for having me on.
Well, Michelle, this book is really interesting, and I think it's interesting to me for a couple reasons. We are hearing a lot about this now, and typically it seems like something that comes up during election time. Of course, some would argue it seems like we're always in election time in some form or fashion. But why was this a topic that was personal enough for you to write a book about it?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. You know, books take a long time to write, and the idea for this book came up almost 3.5 years ago, and the idea that it would be published the same week that the president proposed a tuition-free college program is kind of absurd, but wonderful,
right.
too. For the past 15 years, I have been following this movement at the grassroots to develop tuition-free paths to college. On the part of local communities, local community colleges, and increasingly some states. And so I started working on the book thinking that I would really kind of step back and take a high-level look at that movement and figure out why so many people and places were interested in free college right now. And, of course, as I worked on the book, and it became clear that there was going to be national movement on this issue as well, I, of course, added that to the mix. But the answer is still the same. It's time to kind of assess how we got here, why so many people are interested in free college.
Yeah. It's something I had never heard about before that is talked about a good deal in this book, and some of our audience members might be familiar with it, Michelle, and that is the College Promise movement. I mean, you talk a lot about it, and of course, what it has at its core, you write in the book, if one were to build a promise program with racial and economic equity goals at its core, it should be designed to reach as many potential college goers as possible. Explain to our audience, for those who don't know, what the Promise Program is.
Right. So it's a movement rather than a program, and I would say it's a movement made up of many, many different types of programs, but they have in common this idea that not only is college unaffordable, but we need more people to be going on to some kind of post-secondary education or training. So there is an organization called College Promise. It's an advocacy organization that serves as a kind of umbrella for all of these efforts. But if you're talking about what Promise programs are, they're very diverse and they're very grassroots, and they bubble up within local communities that say, hey, we need to figure out how to give our young people, or in some cases our adults, the opportunity to get some sort of post-secondary training to do better in life.
Yeah. Already in this conversation, Michelle, you've mentioned grassroots twice, I've noticed. And it seems like when things start getting done, and we see it even in what's being, you know, this new movement that is taking place around the George Floyd bill when it comes to policing, it does seem like the grassroots is where it all begins. Do you think that is going to be the key here when it comes to free college, that grassroots movement will continue to expand and also become more vocal?
Yeah, the Black Lives Matter movement is a great example, but what you're describing is very typical in the U.S. When new policies come along, they're rarely just, you know, sprung on us by the federal government. They usually start at a local level, and then localities, communities, cities learn from each other, and they copy what other cities are doing, and movements spread, and then often states look at what localities are doing, and then they try to do the same thing. So this is a very typical, it actually has a name in the political science literature, it's called policy diffusion. Of course, the problem is if you really want to reach people at scale, it's not enough just to have a bunch of grassroots programs. So that's why you see federal legislation being introduced or proposed to really take these ideas that were pioneered at the state and local level and make them reach more people. So that's what the Biden administration proposed to do last week.
Yeah. And you give examples of how this can be done with education. Talk to us about what you found out, especially looking at the example in El Dorado, Michelle, when it comes to what's taking place there in southern Arkansas.
Yeah, so the El Dorado Promise is one of the very most generous, another word we use sometimes when we talk about these is place-based scholarships. The reason we call them that is you become eligible for them based on the place that you live and the place that you attend high school. So the El Dorado Promise was inspired by the Kalamazoo Promise, which was the first of this generation of these place-based promise scholarships. And they saw what was in my hometown of Kalamazoo, and community leaders in El Dorado took a look at what was going on in Kalamazoo and said, we should do this here. And so they have one of the earliest and one of the most generous college promise programs in the nation. Students from the El Dorado schools can use their scholarship to attend college anywhere in the U.S. And the program has been really transformative. Early on, it led to a sudden increase in the percentage of graduates of the school district who were going to college. And over the years, we've had rigorous evaluation studies carried out about El Dorado that have shown improved test scores in the K-12 schools, improved rates, higher rates of college going, and very importantly, higher rates of degree and certificate completion for students who receive the scholarship. So it's one of the most generous and also one of the most evaluated of the Promise programs.
And I think that, again, I had never heard of any of these programs, Michelle, which is why I think a book like this is so important. You, of course, mentioned your connection there to that particular program, especially, and that's one thing we find out early on in the book, is that, you know, you started at literally looking at yourself and your own family when it comes to thinking about the impact that college can have and why it is so important for us to do, as the subtitle of the book says, to have that access, equity, and prosperity. Do you think that personal passion is one of the things that drove you over these years in not only doing the research, but also now giving us this book?
Yes, I appreciate that question. I mean, I think I always had in mind I would write about my family, but I would say that as growing up in California with an excellent, affordable system of public higher education, I took college affordability for granted. And it was only over the years as a university professor, somebody who watches my students struggle, many of them first-generation college goers, you know, really struggle with affording college and working so many hours and having to delay their course taking so they can work more hours. It's only then that I really came to understand that my own family's opportunity had to do with being in this particular place in California at this particular time when higher education was widely available and affordable. And I think there are a lot of people in my generation who maybe take that for granted. So I wanted to just make sure that I highlighted that. It's a way of showing how much the system has changed. Higher education was affordable through the 1970s, and if you came from a low-income family, your Pell Grants covered most of your college education. But they've lost value over the years, so both the middle class and low-income people really struggle today to afford college.
Michelle, I have to say, though, because you even take us back even to 2015 with the State of the Union address with President Obama, and remind us that this has not just been a left-right issue. This is something that's been difficult to get both sides to agree on something. What do you think has been the reason for that? Because I think many people listen to this conversation and say what she is saying makes sense. That, you know, and that we should want more accessibility for people, we should want more opportunity, because that's going to make the country better. That sounds great. But why do you think it has not gotten done?
Well, it didn't get done in 2015 because the Congress was in Republican hands. And when we look back at that period, we know that a very deliberate strategy on the part of the Republican Congress was to not let the president get any major gains. So, you know, once the midterms took place, there was very little that President Obama could do. So this proposal was in his State of the Union address in 2015, but I don't know if there was an expectation that it would be debated and voted on, and it never was. That being said, the grassroots movement that we talked about a few minutes ago, spreading through communities and states, has been a very, I won't even call it bipartisan, I'd say it's a very nonpartisan movement, where people across the political spectrum understand that this makes sense both for individuals and communities, for individuals and for states. And so there's been buy-in across the political spectrum. And if you look at the best known of the statewide tuition-free college programs, it's in Tennessee, which is a very Republican state. I think that what's happening now with the Biden administration proposal is it's kind of walking this fine line in hopes of attracting bipartisan support, but also with the need to respond to the left, which had more ambitious goals for tuition-free college. In other words, a program that would include four-year public and universities as well as two-year colleges. So it's a narrow pathway that the Biden administration has to navigate its way to actually getting this program into law.
And it seems like, even according to your book, Michelle, that this may actually be one of the positive byproducts of what we've experienced in the past year, with a new spotlight being on having individuals that are trained and ready. You say this in the book, and I thought this was an interesting thing for us to talk about. The COVID-19-induced recession also lent greater urgency to states' efforts to retrain adults, giving energy to free college initiatives originally designed to address employer needs in a tight labor market. Where does this leave us? As the fallout from the COVID-19 crisis played out in the overall economy and higher education institutions, the free college conversation continued. Do you think that has kind of opened the door to what you mentioned, that not only the Biden administration bringing this back up, but also making it something that people say, okay, this makes more sense?
I think it has. I think it's funny. I started working on the book when the unemployment rate was very, very low, and there was a lot of business support for the idea of investing in free college to help employers find the trained and skilled workers they need. Now, of course, when the bottom fell out of the economy a year ago, I had to kind of rethink that. I was still writing, and of course, it's kind of a different argument, but it also points to the necessity of accessible and affordable higher ed for workers to be able to be competitive in this kind of economy. They need some kind of post-secondary education or training. And it's interesting because just this year, since the pandemic hit, we've had an adult free college program approved in Michigan. We've had a program approved in New Jersey, a program approved in Virginia. There are a handful of other ones as well. And I think the pandemic and the racial justice movement that's been underway, but the pandemic as well, you know, really put a spotlight on inequality, and it put a spotlight on those workers who are disadvantaged in the current economy because they are less skilled and have less education. And it also really increased the urgency for states to figure out how to have a skilled, competitive workforce. So all those things came together, and the pandemic just really, I think, put a spotlight on existing inequality that maybe people hadn't been paying that much attention to beforehand.
Yeah. What is your hope, Michelle? Because there are questions still, I think, to be answered and that people will evaluate. Do you think that for this to really get where it needs to go, that it will kind of follow the model that we've been talking about here, something that is done almost state by state?
I do, because the proposal that the Biden administration made last week as part of its American Families Plan, it's a national proposal, and there are several bills in Congress, and there's one that matches this proposal quite closely. But the proposals are all for federal-state cooperation to put these programs into place in specific states. So states have to essentially buy into the program or accept it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of federal money on the table. What they're talking about is a 3-for-1 match that for every dollar states invest in making community college tuition free, the federal government will provide $3. So it's a pretty sweet deal. But as we saw with Medicaid expansion, there are still states that are going to choose not to participate. So I guess, you know, one of my hopes is that the conversation will happen at the state level about whether this is good for the state and its residents, and I hope that it will be a bipartisan conversation as the College Promise movement has been to date. So that's, you know, that's one of my hopes.
Yeah. Well, it's a great conversation for us to have, and a timely one at that. The book could not come out at a better time, Michelle. So congratulations to you on that. Again, Michelle Miller Adams has been our guest. The book is The Path to Free College in Pursuit of Access, Equity, and Prosperity. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com. You all can get it there. It's published by Harvard Education Press. And, Michelle, how can our audience stay connected with you?
You can just Google my name and you'll find me in two places. I have two jobs. I'm a senior researcher at the Upjohn Institute, where I carry out this research. I'm a professor at a large public university called Grand Valley State University, and I welcome email conversations, and I'm also on Twitter at @MMillerAdams. So you can find me there. I also welcome conversing by Twitter, and I'm happy to answer any questions that people have about the free college movement or about the book, and I so appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Oh, the pleasure's definitely on mine. We've already tagged you, actually, Michelle, on Twitter with the link to the podcast for this conversation, so we definitely invite our audience to head over to our page at Cyrus Webb on Twitter. You guys will find the tag there for Michelle. Michelle, congratulations again, and looking forward to our next chat together.
Thank you so much, Cyrus. Take care.
Hey, thank you, and we thank you, our audience, for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Let's make today amazing. Take care.